This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Kanasin, and welcome to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today on the show, I'm speaking to Raymond Gabriel, co-founder and executive director at People Systems Consultancy. Now, we're going to be taking a look at the importance of financial literacy, not just in everyone's lives, but in putting it in schools, and how we can all learn to better our financial habits during this very strenuous time for many people out there. So, Raymond, thank you so much for joining me on the line today.
Thank you for having me, Roshan.
So, Raymond, aside People Systems Consultancy, you've also written a book called Money Quotient. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that was a book about how to teach parents about how to teach children about financial about finances. Is that correct?
That's right. I sort of wrote it for parents to be able to educate kids, but the main thing I wanted to do was for families to manage finances better. So as the parents read the book, they could handle their finances better, and what they model became what they teach the kids. So it's a two-part thing, not just for them to teach it, but they have to walk the talk. Huh?
Very interesting. That's a great idea to kind of subtly teach people how to handle their finances better by getting them to teach other people. But Raymond, just to clarify, you are not a certified financial planner, right? You're a trainer with People Systems Consultancy.
Yeah, I actually write books on financial literacy. I've written a syllabus, which is approved. I'm trying to get it into schools so all students can have access to knowledge. I didn't want to be a certified financial planner because I'm not interested in selling financial products. I'm more interested in educating people in this area.
So, Raymond, let's talk about the current situation that we're in. So we've had a few episodes here on Ringgit and Sense talking about the different ways to take advantage of the financial aid that the government's giving us, whether to go take up the loan moratorium or opt out, or even taking up EPF's contribution. Now, from your viewpoint, when it comes to the financial aid that the government is giving us, how do we fully make use of that?
I think the first thing is your mindset towards towards finances and towards money at this point. You must have a mindset of hope that things will get better. You have to have a mindset of the future, not just consume money for current consumption. And if you can, I think that the very critical thing that you need to do with any cash that you're receiving, be it from the government or with something else, is to try and look at how you can actually use some of it for consumption, and also use some of it to maybe start a small business to pay for your future needs and to pay for extra expenses that you may occur. You know, I think it's important not to just consume everything that is given to you. You have to use some to generate some income as well.
But that's easier said than done, right, Raymond? I mean, we often talk about side hustles or passive income or things like that. I mean, it's one thing to do it when things are good, but now if things are not looking very great. How does someone get into that sort of situation where they've started up a small business of their own?
We at People Systems, we've trained about, I think, close to 20,000 entrepreneurs in the region. We have offices in Indonesia, Philippines, and Laos, besides Malaysia, all affected by the lockdown. And what we try and teach those entrepreneurs now, because we've gone back to try and see how we can help them and how we can actually keep them going, we look at switching businesses to things which are considered essential services. Like, for example, we have one of our participants who used to do, selling all kinds of different types of products, who's now switched to making bread and actually looking at placing his bread in within the neighborhood. You know, we have a lady who used to actually look at selling vegetables, you know, in her PPR flats and to use that to generate income. But now she's actually looking at producing hand sanitizers and reselling it and reselling hand sanitizers that she buys, you know, within the whole neighborhood that she's in and around the surrounding area. So there are things that you can do, actually. People like Grab, Lazada, all these organizations that should help you deliver goods so you don't have to leave your home. If you really think there's enough technology at the basic level that you can use to actually grow your business and to actually think about things that you can service your own community within the area where you live. You know, so it's still possible. question.
So on an individual level then, so getting into these different small businesses, especially if maybe you're a daily wage earner or you current, or maybe you've unfortunately lost your job, you're saying that this is a possible way to help mitigate that that scenario, especially when you've lost your income. Now, in your experience, then how effective is that at replacing income? I mean, it's one thing to have a full time job or earn a daily wage at a,
and one thing
to sell bread, right? Yes, you can make money out of that, but how do you effectively do it, especially with people being a bit more cost conscious now?
I think you need to think about the markets that you're in. What goods you can do. Instead of producing goods, you can even look at, there are some people who have lost a job who have plenty of skills. You can use those skills and market them online. You can use different ideas that you have and passions that you have and turn it into something good. You may even write a book, you know, of something that you're passionate about. But the I think rather than looking at the situation, and I know it's tough for a lot of people, but rather than look at the situation and look at, you know, what you don't have and how tough it is, I think you need to switch your mind and get it focused on what you can do and how you can generate that income for your family as well. You may have savings. My advice to people is who are not earning anything, who are just relying on that savings that they have. There's going to be, you know, some time for things to recover and for people to get back into a work situation. I'm not trying to bring bad news, but it's good for you to actually look at doing something to generate income while you are relying on that savings, not just finishing up the savings that you have. While things may not be as easy as before, you can't just go and set up a stall outside or whatever. But for some people, they were on incomes like maybe 1,500, 2,000 ringgit a month. And to get those kind of incomes from doing something and selling something online is not very, very difficult. Because Malaysians, as you know, we generally like to consume things. We don't cook everything at home. We sometimes like to buy good stuff. You know, we look forward to our nasi lemak. We look forward to, having our roti canai. And maybe there could be people who are making those things and selling it online, producing frozen roti canai from their homes, supplying it to their neighborhood. There are things that we can do, actually.
So if you had to advise someone on how to start, let's say they're at home, they've got a skill set, they make really good bread and they want to start marketing that and selling that to help either add more income or supplement income lost, how would they go about starting that endeavor?
I think the first thing to do is to take a step back, to really ask yourself whether that business you're getting into is something you're passionate about. Don't just do things just for income if you don't have any passion with it, because a business is something you have to keep doing and you have to be consistent with it. So it has to be an area that you are passionate about. You know, if you are passionate about baking and you really enjoy making bread, go ahead, do it. But if you're not and you're it's something that you maybe, you know, don't have a gift for or don't have a skill for, look at something that you do have a gift and a skill for. So for us, I think when we teach people, the intersection between passion, gifts and skills is what you should be doing. The most important being your passion and that you have some skill to do it. Once you decide on doing that, I think it's important for you to look at actually your profit margin, look at your cost, take into account things like electricity, your raw materials, you know, the things that you're doing. Really sit down and do a proper cost, because you don't want to do things and sell it and earn some income. But at the end of the day, your margins are not good, because business is about making that good margin for yourself. So these are just some basic things, I think, that you can start off with. There's a lot more that you need to think about. But I think by doing these two things, it may get you started on the right foot and you can learn more as you go along.
I'm speaking to Raymond Gabriel, co-founder and executive director at People Systems Consultancy and author of Money Quotient. We're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be getting into the importance of financial literacy in this environment. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Kanasan, and welcome back to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. Today, I'm speaking to Raymond Gabriel, co-founder and executive director at People Systems Consultancy. Raymond, we were talking earlier, but I think you were making the point that now more than ever, it's important to take a look at ways you can generate income at home. Now, coming back to lessons that can be learned in this environment, this situation has highlighted the importance of financial literacy in not just homes, but in the country overall. In your experience, what are some of the biggest gaps in terms of financial literacy in Malaysia?
I think, the Financial Education Network, which was formed by various organizations as, such as the Security Commission and AKPK, among a few others. They mentioned that, you know, one in five adults don't even have any savings in the last 6 months. About, 52% of them, half of them, you know, struggle to even raise ₱1,000 if there's an emergency, you know. I think for many of us, we looked at finance as something that will keep coming to us. You know, we looked at jobs as something that we could just earn every month. And because of that, we started living with the money that we earn. For example, if we earn 2,000, we spend 2,000. Without thinking about the future, without thinking about what we can do to that, that income is something that we should use partly for our needs, but also partly to generate future income. You know, we should look at saving it. We should look at growing it. We should look at it as a seed, for example, that we are planting to grow sort of a tree that can provide for us in the future. You know? I think that thinking and how to go about it is quite lacking in Malaysia. There's a lot of people who are trying to do things with it. We were trying to get into universities with a program that we do at CIMB Foundation called Be Smart to teach university students how to manage money. We have done that for about 16,000 students. It's still ongoing. We've done most of all universities. We're trying to get into schools to teach it through a syllabus we have approved by the Ministry of Education. But I think those are the younger students. There's a lot more we can do for adults as well. And I think it's lacking, Roshan.
So just before we get into the adult side, with regards to children, when you were doing, let's say, this Be Smart program with CIMB Foundation, what were some of the most startling findings or observations that you had in terms of a lack of awareness about finances?
I think for many students, they realized that the way they spent money is tied to a certain lifestyle. So they were spending money on a sort of an automated mode without thinking, you know. One of the things we did, we used a lot of gamification in our process to teach people how to manage money, how to invest. And one of the games we played, we sort of found out that a lot of their money goes towards things like things that they buy online, their normal hanging out with friends, you know, with their teh tarik and coffee shops and other things. And they realized, a lot of the students, that these could be types of money that they could save by changing their lifestyle. And some of them began to think about investment, and some of them even began to invest, you know, in unit trusts, in other things that you could start off with a small amount of capital. So we really love seeing that change in the people. And some students took it a step further. They began to educate their parents on what they could do and what they could pick up from the program. So they started to change their parents' lifestyle as well. I think financial literacy is a lot linked to your lifestyle and how you live. You know, that's how you consume money. So if you can consciously think about it and change it, I think you would get to a point where you'd save a lot more.
So Raman, let's talk about adults then. So you made the point earlier that people regularly spend as much as they earn, and the idea that if you have a job, you'll always have a job. And obviously that's become come to the forefront now as people become a bit more concerned about job security. What would you like to see people, Malaysians, learn from this experience? And how do we act upon that? So if should we assume that jobs aren't secure?
I think there are two types of people currently in Malaysia at the moment. There are people who are in survival mode. Basically, they've lost some of their income or have a reduced income at this point. And there are those Malaysians who are working from home who still have an income. You know, I think both types of Malaysians have a role to play. We have to think of our nation as a community, right? So in a community, sometimes you may have more. So for those who still have our income, who are living at home, maybe we can look at ways to reduce our expenses, look at ways to cut down, and then we can look at how we can use that extra that we have, both to save and to help other people who are in a very, very difficult position. There are mothers, you know, in the B40 community, that means those who are in the 40% of our community who are earning, the lowest incomes in Malaysia. Some of them are struggling to buy milk, pampers, you know, for their kids. So there's a lot that we can do, you know, if you just look around our community and find those people. For those who have lost their income or have a reduced income and currently who are in survival mode, I think you need to think about yourself as not someone who can live the way that you can live before. You have to think of yourself as in a transition period where you have to really lock down, manage every cent that you have. For example, you know, if you're used to having all your air conditioning on, reduce it. Try and look at ways to find to reduce your electricity bills. Try and find ways to like I said, to generate an income. Find something passionate that you can do to serve your community. Look at ways that you could teach your kids as well. Maybe that subscriptions that you're having, you know, whether it's entertainment or whatever, you can look at free subscriptions, things on YouTube rather than looking at things that you have to pay for. Every cent counts. So it's like a game. You have to look at your general expenses and look at where you can cut down, and you get to the point where what I need is this, and this is what I'm going to survive on for this period until I generate my enough income to get past this and to get to another level. Yeah.
So what are some of the key lessons you'd like to see people learn going forward? In an ideal situation, when all this comes to an end, the MCO, the pandemic, or what kind of actions do you want people to start adopting in their lives?
I think the minimum thing is to look at if you can put aside 30% of your income to pay yourself. People say paying yourself is savings, but it's not just to put it aside and leave it in the bank, but to look at how you can invest it to grow. I think that's the number one thing. If your lifestyle can change, and it's very surprising when we've worked with adults before, I've done a lot of programs, and they think that 30% is not possible. But when we actually sit down with them and go through what they're spending money on, you realize that maybe that 100 ringgit haircut a month, or going out for coffee every day and buying that Starbucks can actually result in about 300 ringgit or 400 ringgit a month, you know. And that's that little things that you do every day to think about how you can play this game of reducing your expenses every single day, because it's what you do every day that gives you that savings that you have every week, every month, that you can just invest and you can grow it. So that's the first thing that I think that needs to change. How can you actually look at living with 70% of your income and at least saving 30%? I think the second thing is, you mentioned a good point, Roshan, and we're talking about it. I don't think, looking at jobs alone that you have, if you're in an area which is not as stable as it was before, your industry is affected badly, I think you need to start thinking about generating an income, okay? For some jobs, it's okay. It's still very modern. You can look at it. But within those jobs as well, think of your money as something you're earning from business. So how do you put it aside? How do you grow it? How do you invest it, you know? The best place for people to get through is when they have passive income coming from things that they invested in, whether it's unit trust, whether it's a property that they bought, whether it's rental income or whatever. But those things are actually what they're using to live on, and they don't really need their salary every month, and they could use that to just invest or to grow. Yeah, that's a good place to come to. Generating their own income, again, as we mentioned earlier, is also a critical thing for those who are in survival mode right now.
So looking at the cost side, the spending of money there, that you were talking about, how you worked with some people, based on that observation, what were some of the areas where you saw people being able to cut the most? And I mean, there's an assumption here, of course, that these are individuals from a certain bracket, whether it's the M40 or the T20. Do you have any observations in terms of the different income brackets where they were able to cut spending?
I think, Malaysians across all levels, the one place where we could cut spending is our food. We consume a lot of food. We eat out a lot. Just taking a packed lunch to work, for example. And I'm not just talking about the M40 or the T20, the top 20%. If you look at even the B40 segment, people actually look at buying their lunch. You know, they have a big lunch. Whereas if they cook more from home, that's a huge savings for the entire family, because everybody in the family is eating out, you know. So food is something that we love. We have good food in Malaysia, but we can also learn the skills to cook our food, to plan ahead, to cook in the evening before. That's one big area that we can save quite a bit. You know, making your own coffee, making your own tea, having your own teh tarik, you know, rather than that going and buying things. I think that would save quite a bit as well. You can say that, look, you know, teh tarik is my outlet and I need to have my outlet. Yeah, fine, okay, so bring a flask, get all your friends to sit together and have your teh tarik with your friends, you know, rather than, going and consuming things. You know, consume what you need. I think that's critical for us, yeah, at this point, if you're really struggling with income.
All right, Raymond, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Roshan.
That was Raymond Gabriel, co-founder and executive director at People Systems Consultancy. Raymond is also the author of Money Quotient. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Karnison for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.